from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In a case of misplaced machismo and bullying that's captured our attention, Jonathan Martin, an offensive linebacker for the Miami Dolphins, resigning from his team after a string of allegedly racist, violent threats from another player. Rumors that his own coaches may have told his teammates to toughen him up. Questions of race, sports culture, and more swirl around this team, and it's gotten a lot of people talking about adult bullies in the workplace and in our lives. This hour on Point, bullies in the NFL and beyond. You can join us on air or online. What do you make of this story? What does it tell us about the NFL, about adult bullies, about victims? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Pompano Beach, Florida, is Andrew Abramson, NFL reporter for the Palm Beach Post. He writes the Daily Dolphin blog. We've got links to his articles at our website, onpointradio.org. Andrew, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So tell us, what's the latest in this investigation?
Well, first of all, what's important to remember is there's so much going around here and there's different sides. What we know for a fact is Jonathan Martin left the team last week. At first, the team was describing him as out with an illness. Rumors started coming out of this bullying and harassing. At first, the team denied that there was any bullying going on. But then once these voicemails came out from teammate Richie Incognito with racial slurs and threats to Martin's family, that's when the team moved to suspend Richie Incognito. Now, what's happened since then has been pretty remarkable. Incognito's teammates, the Dolphins players, have come out in droves and just completely backed Incognito, saying, you know, he wasn't a racist, these kind of words are misunderstood, and so forth. But what we do know is the voicemails, you know, we've heard them, they speak for themselves. We also know that Dolphins coaches did believe that Jonathan Martin was somebody who was a soft player and that they wanted Incognito, who they considered a team leader, and others to toughen him up. Now, that doesn't mean leaving voicemails and so forth. We do know that Incognito on national TV used to refer to Jonathan Martin as the big weirdo. He called him that on Twitter, that Jonathan Martin was forced to pay what they call a rookie tax, pay, you know, $8,000 dinners for veterans, $15,000 for a trip to Vegas, that he felt uncomfortable paying. But these are things that are common in the NFL, and this is actually coming out now.
So obviously we can't repeat some of the language in these voicemails and text messages that Jonathan Martin allegedly received from his teammate Richie Incognito. But give us a sense of the severity of the threats, of the harassment.
Right. I mean, in the voicemail, you hear the N-word. You're hearing, you know, basically, like I said, threats to his family. But, like, the teammates are, first of all, they're saying that this voicemail was going around the locker room as a joke, that even Jonathan Martin had laughed about them at one time. The team is really trying to spin this in a completely different way. But when the team saw the text of these voicemails, they had to go and move and suspend Richie Incognito.
Here is Richie Incognito speaking to Miami's TV station WSVN Channel 7 News on Tuesday of this week. He told reporter Alex DiPrato that he was hoping to move past this controversy.
You know what? I'm just trying to weather the storm right now, and this will pass.
You know, there's an allegation that you left these voicemails on Jonathan Martin's voicemail. What do you have to say about those?
You know, no comment right now. We're just going to kind of weather the storm, and that's it.
And then on Monday, Miami Dolphins head coach Joe Philbin met with reporters detailing the events that led to the departure of former offensive lineman Jonathan Martin. Allegedly received these texts and voicemails. He's gone from the team's roster.
Last Monday evening, in preparation prior to our preparation for our practice against the Cincinnati Bengals, Jonathan Martin left our facility prior to that practice after an incident occurred in our team dining room. Later that evening, he contacted a member of our organization. Soon thereafter, I contacted Jonathan personally, requested a meeting with him, at which he readily accepted.
So what was the incident in the team dining room that led to Jonathan Martin's departure?
The incident itself doesn't sound very severe. There's a prank that apparently the offensive line says they pull this regularly on different teammates, where the last person to sit down, everyone gets up and moves to a different table. So it doesn't necessarily sound like that was something on its own that made him flip out, but that was apparently the moment when he snapped. Now, there's a report today coming out that Martin's agent had actually gone to Dolphins general manager Jeff Ireland before this, a couple of days before, and said Martin was having a problem with Incognito. And now this is just reported right now, but apparently Jeff Ireland told Martin's agent that if Martin has a problem with Incognito, he should punch him.
So there are also reports, and you've reported on this, that the Miami Dolphins coaches knew what was going on for a long period of time, and that at least one coach was sent to Incognito or some other players and told to toughen up Martin, you know, essentially with this understanding that the coaches said that Martin was too soft of a player, right?
Right, and I think we're talking about different things, and I wouldn't be surprised if this happens regularly in the NFL, where you see a player that you don't feel is that tough football player, and you say, hey, let's make him tougher, let's toughen him up. Now, I don't believe that coaches said to Richie Incognito, you know, send a voicemail with a racial word in it and harass him like that. That's not what I believe they meant by toughening up. But still, I mean, this speaks to maybe a larger issue in the NFL where this does happen. There's no doubt about it.
How have the Dolphins players responded to this across the board?
They are completely backing Incognito. I think they are stunned that this has become the story that it's become. And they're basically saying people don't understand what it's like in a locker room. I'm going to read you a quote from Derek Shelby. He's a defensive end on the team. He said, most people don't understand this culture. Most people don't put themselves through pain like we do. So I don't think it's fair for an everyday person to judge what goes on in this atmosphere. Tyson Klebo, a right tackle who was on the offensive line with Jonathan Martin, said about Martin, if you have a legitimate problem with somebody, you should say, hey, I have a problem with this, and stand up and be a man. So that's the way they're pushing it, that they don't believe this was anything different than what happens with any other teams, and that Martin, you know, goes to this whole idea that he was too soft, he should have stood up for himself. You don't quit in the middle of the season and then go and release voicemails to the media.
To that point, here's some more sound on Tuesday, November 5th of this week. New York Giants safety Antrell Rollet talked to CBS radio affiliate in New York, WFAN, about the controversy and put some blame on Martin.
Yeah, was Richie Incognito wrong? Absolutely. But I think the other guy is just more to blame as Richie because he's allowed it to happen. And, you know, at this level, you're a man. You know,
right,
you're not
right.
A little boy. You know, you're not a freshman in college. You know, you're a man.
Man up, Andrew Abramson. That's what we continue to hear. I mean, I guess there's a little bit of anger throughout the NFL that Jonathan Richie took locker room business and made it public.
Oh, I think there's no doubt about it, and I think this is going to have league-wide ramifications. I talked about that rookie tax, the rookie hazing that goes on. Some of it's pretty innocent. They shave heads of the players, and they make them carry their pads and so forth, even, you know, maybe tie them up to a goalpost as a prank. But there's also the financial ramification. There's the rookie tax where the rookies take out the veterans and they have to pay for the meal and so forth. I talked to Cameron Wake, who's on the Dolphins, and he called it a rite of passage. He said, this league is a group of elite men. It's a fraternity. It's a brotherhood. It's a lot of things. And there is a membership. Now, I think when this all, you know, the NFL is investigating right now, this obviously has become a huge national story, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, there's possible lawsuits coming down from the Martin family, and if the NFL does go ahead and change this and say, no, you can't have a rookie hazing anymore, rookies can't pay for veterans' meals and so forth. Now, whether it would still go on under the table, you know, that remains to be seen.
So how has the NFL dealt with this kind of thing before, if they've had to at all?
I don't think they've really had to. This is a pretty unprecedented case, not just in the NFL, but in professional sports. You've never had an issue like this where a starter on a team just leaves midseason and says he was being harassed by a teammate.
So remind us again, the NFL has issued a special investigator to take care of this, to investigate this. Tell us what the process is.
If they have hired a special investigator who will, the process has already begun. I believe some of the Dolphins players have already been interviewed. They're looking into it. They're going to release a public report, so we will be able to see the exact details of what they find. The Dolphins right now are in wait-and-see mode. They're not commenting anymore on the specifics. They said, you know, we're going to wait and see what comes out of this report. Dolphins coach Joe Philbin has said that if he finds there was any wrongdoing in the locker room and so forth as a result of this report, he will straighten it out. That's what he's saying.
So, and Richie Incognito is suspended indefinitely, is that right?
Yes, he's suspended indefinitely. I'd be very surprised if he ever plays for the Dolphins again. He was a free agent anyway at the end of the year. But what's going to be really interesting to see is what this report comes up with and whether Dolphins coaches, general manager, anyone loses their job over this.
And how did this all come to light? I read that Jonathan Martin's parents, they're both attorneys, and somehow they were involved in exposing this?
Well, we know Martin's representatives are involved. We don't know exactly who that is at this point. The speculation is it's his agent, it's attorney. His mother is a corporate attorney for Toyota. I mean, this is a very well-to-do family. Both his parents went to Harvard University. Martin actually had a chance to go to Harvard. He passed up and went to Stanford because he thought it was a better football opportunity. But had he gone to Harvard, he actually would have been part of the first African-American four-generation family to go to Harvard. He's still believed to go. He's going to go to Harvard Law School at some point after his career. You know, whether he continues playing remains to be seen. He could be going to Harvard Law School soon. But I talked to his high school coach who said he believes that's part of the issue, that Martin grew up around Stanford, Duke, Rice kind of guys and not Nebraska, LSU kind of players. I know that's a stereotype by his coach, but he's basically saying, you know, he's a good, sensitive guy, a yes-sir kind of guy, the perfect target for bullies.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about allegations of bullying and intimidation on the NFL's Miami Dolphins football team and how bullying doesn't stop at the playground and can have devastating effects on our adult lives. Andrew Abramson is our guest today, joining me from Pompano Beach, Florida, NFL reporter at the Palm Beach Post. Andrew, I know you have to run. One quick question before you go. I'm curious, you've covered this kind of stuff for a long time. You've covered the NFL for a long time. What is the story? What's at the heart of this to you? Is it about race? Is there a class involvement here? Is just a big bully at work? I mean, how do you see it?
I think there's a lot of angles. I don't think there's one specific thing. I think it's a lot about locker room culture, and you have two sides here. You have a lot of outside forces coming in and saying, you know, this isn't right in today's society. This can't be going in locker rooms. You can't have words flying around like this. Times have changed. And then you have players within the NFL locker room saying, hey, butt out. This is our world. You don't understand this world. We're pro athletes, and barely anybody can understand what we go through. You know, even the use, the racial slur, the use of the N-words, I found it very interesting talking to players, both black and white players. Brian Hartline, who's a Dolphins receiver, he is white, and he said, the use of the N-word, it's depicted and used in terms where it can offend or not offend. It can be taken completely out of context. Said he knows it's a sensitive word and you want to stay away from it, but I think the players believe that the people from outside just can't understand their world.
Andrew Abramson, NFL reporter at the Palm Beach Post. Andrew, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Joining me now from College Park, Maryland, is Kevin Blackiestone, sports writer and professor of sports journalism at the University of Maryland. He's a frequent panelist on ESPN's Around the Horn. Kevin Blackiestone, welcome back to On Point. Glad to have you here.
Thanks, Jane.
So is this kind of hazing, this kind of harassment common in the NFL?
The targeted at one individual, the personal attack that this seems to have elevated itself to is not. From everyone, from guys that I know in the league, coaches, players, and from my time being around the Dallas Cowboys when I wrote a column at the Dallas Morning News, this sort of behavior is an aberration.
Well, so then describe locker room culture in the NFL generally, and if there's a culture of bullying specifically, what does that look like?
Well, you know, there's no question that when you talk about team sports, that there's no cauldron of masculinity that bubbles hotter than that of an NFL team, and in particular, it's locker room. And it's full of a lot of what we would call, I guess, alpha males. And it's a very, as people have said, a very testosterone-filled environment. However, there have always been different personalities in locker rooms. And there are some guys who put up with the foolishness and some guys who are not a part of it at all. And different teams deal with those different personalities in different ways. Some do it so that it works in their favor. And in this case, it looks like Miami was unable to handle it, and it has not worked in that team's favor. And so the question is, who's really, how you control all of these personalities that are in this locker room.
So we're talking, as far as this bullying case goes against Jonathan Martin, we're talking death threats, we're talking racial epithets. I mean,
right.
it's pretty pretty deep here. We've seen a lot of interviews from NFL players, one of which I just played in the first block, who say Jonathan Martin was wrong for making locker room business public, essentially, outing what was going on there, telling Martin essentially to man up. What do you make of the reaction to this story inside the NFL and outside the NFL?
Well, I'm not surprised. I said day one when it broke, I said there are going to be a lot of players that stand up with Incognito and stand against Martin, because one of the things in the NFL, as I just mentioned, about this culture of masculinity in which it is played and in which it stands, is that no one is to show any sign of weakness. And and Jonathan Martin's actions in this particular case are going to be seen as weakness. And football players do not want to stand next to a teammate who is perceived as being weak. And so I'm not at all surprised about that. And they would much rather stand with a guy like Incognito, despite the fact that he has a record of abhorrent behavior that's as long as he is tall and has followed him every step of the way throughout his amateur and professional football career.
Right. He was in his first 4 years, I think I see here, Incognito led the NFL in penalties for unnecessary roughness. NFL players voted him the league's second dirtiest player in 2009. I mean, you can see some of this coming, can't you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he started his college football career at Nebraska, and twice he was suspended at Nebraska by separate coaches for behavior unbecoming to the team, and then he transferred to Oregon and never suited up because they kicked him off the team after they saw what kind of guy he was within the span of about a week. So this is a guy who, I question how players and how a team like the Dolphins can actually elevate him into their so-called leadership council in the first place, because this is not the kind of person I would think that you would want to be represented with any sort of leadership on your team.
Let's go to the phones here. Ike is calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Ike. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, I know you're pressed for time. Let me give you a personal story. If you can't tell from the sound of my voice, I'm a pretty big boy, all right? And I've been through my share. I've lost a bunch of teeth. I broke my knuckles. I've been in my share of fights. But my dad taught me a long time ago that it takes a bigger man to walk away. And to this day, I still have to deal with people in my workplace, which I work construction, in my workplace where they're Nazi-like and they're sociopaths. And they think that if they can get power over somebody, they can run them, they can derogatorily talk to them, they can run them like a dog, okay, to use a Southern term, okay? You know what? This isn't okay. And yes, I give credit to this man for standing up. And to be quite honest with you and your Alpha Mel attitude, I got to tell you something. When I go to work to do my job. If I'm good at my job, that's all I need. And whether you're an NFL linebacker or somebody painting a house, okay? And this machismo, and these I'm bigger than you, and I can beat you up, and this guy even went past that to the point that I'll kill your family or I'll call you the N-word. You know what? You're wrong. You're absolutely wrong. And I don't care who defends this fella. He's wrong. He's sociopathic. And he's bipolar. There's something wrong.
All right, Ike. Thank you. I'm glad you called. Thanks for that perspective. Good luck to you. Here's Sarah in Brookline, Massachusetts. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have to agree with the man just ahead of me. I can't even top that. I mean, the guy, when the players come forward to defend this pathological behavior, I mean, of course they have to. Oh, they might be next. I mean, and also the man who was Mr. Jonathan Martin, he went to Stanford. That by definition makes him soft, as they said. Toughen him up because he's soft. It has to do a lot with culture more than even race. I mean, these other team players, they look at Incognito, of course they're going to defend him. What's going to happen to them if they don't? And they have to look at this other fellow who's not even part of their world, because this man went to Stanford, and that makes him soft by definition. I give Mr. Martin a lot of credit for being brave enough to stand up for himself and for all the people who are bullied, whether it's at the NFL, whether it's in college football, and God knows it's come to high school football as well. We've had boy-on-boy sexual harassment. They call it hazing, and high school has gone out of control, and these are the role models we're supposed to look to, the NFL says.
Sarah, thank you very much. Kevin Blackistone, to Sarah's point, is there an underlying issue of culture here, of class, not just race?
I think absolutely. Now, that's not to say that players from Stanford are necessarily considered any less of men in the NFL than other players. There are a ton of Stanford players in the NFL right now, and their football team is one of the best in the nation, the college team right now. But it is to say that, I think Jonathan Martin is a different kind of cat in the NFL. He seems to be a cerebral type. You know, we know that part of his biography says that had he gone to Harvard, where he was recruited, he would have been the first fourth generation black student ever to attend Harvard. So clearly, class is an issue here. And the other thing I think is really interesting about this whole thing is the emergence of Incognito and who he is. Because, and I was just talking to my class about that just earlier today, because we talk a lot about how the media frames images for the public and how the public comes to believe things. And I told them that if I gave them a blind test and gave them Jonathan Martin's biography and gave them Richie Incognito's biography and asked them who was black and who was white, who would they choose? And all of them said they would choose the opposite races of what these guys actually are, because that's the image that we've built of black and white football players in particular and black and white athletes in general. So I certainly think race and class has a lot to do with this story.
So interesting. Let me bring another voice into this conversation. Joining me now from Buffalo, New York, is Amanda Nickerson, a psychologist and expert on bullying prevention education. She is director of the Alberti Center for Bullying Abuse Prevention at the University of Buffalo and is an associate professor in the school's Department of Education and Counseling Psychology. Amanda Nickerson, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Jane.
So it's hard to imagine a 300-pound linebacker like Jonathan Martin being bullied. What strikes you about this case?
Well, I think there's a number of issues that are at play here, but one is bringing attention to first what bullying is. It's a term that's being thrown around quite a bit, but we actually have a pretty specific understanding of what it is, and it's intentional, aggressive behavior. It's meant to cause physical or psychological harm. It's usually done repeatedly, and it's done to someone who has a hard time defending him or herself. I think one of the things, there's a couple things that are coming up here. One is what makes someone vulnerable or unable to defend themselves. If they're 300 pounds, shouldn't they be able to? But I think that's looking at it a little narrowly. We're not looking at the various things that can put someone in a position of vulnerability, whether that be rank, whether that be their racial or ethnic minority background. Physical size is certainly one of those, but it's not the only one.
So what's the mentality that leads to this kind of bullying, especially in a team environment?
Well, it's, you know, we know more about children and adolescents and the phenomenon of bullying there. But the idea is that the people who see it don't always like it or agree with it. But the person who's doing the bullying has the power, and often, and they're the ones that others want to support, want to be around, or they just don't know what to do about it. So it's easier to go with it. I think that our other guests have more expertise on the locker room culture and those kinds of things than I would. But certainly some of the group phenomenon that we see in bullying could be happening here as well.
So you mentioned it. We tend to think of kids bullying other kids. How is adult bullying different? Is it just more severe or is it more nuanced? What is it?
Well, I think that what probably happens is that children and adolescents who engage in the bullying behavior in the school setting go on later to have other kinds of problems, we know that they're more likely to have criminal records, other aggressive behavior, and indeed it can be bullying. If you're looking at bullying in the workplace, obviously that's a specific environment where we expect more professional behavior, and workplace bullying is a direct violation of that. It's aggression, use, and abuse of power in a very targeted way.
And Kevin Blackiestone, wasn't Richie Incognito bullied as a child for his
weight? Robertson down in Miami Herald wrote a story about that, I think just yesterday. She talked about how he was a big kid in elementary school, and he was bullied by others, and how his father apparently was a tough guy who told him to go stand up for himself, and he went and punched out a kid, and ever since then, I guess he's been punching out other kids and men and bullying people all across the nation. But yeah, that was part of his background.
I also read a piece in Miami talking about Jonathan Martin's former high school football coach. He was quoted as saying, "Bullies usually go after people like Jonathan Martin." So Amanda Nickerson, tell us what this. What does it look like in the workplace? Give us a scenario. What does it look like, bullying in an adult environment in the workplace?
Okay. Well, in a more organizational setting, you might see someone that has the legitimate power in a supervisor or somebody like that systematically targeting one or more people, making insulting comments in a public forum. They could be sabotaging their work or exploiting them, asking them to do unrealistic things and then taking credit for them. You know, the exclusion, the kind of shunning, getting other people involved to be against that person. You know, I guess another thing that I didn't mention, the difference between what adult bullying might look like compared to with kids, is that we're less likely to see the real physical bullying once we're in adulthood. I mean, most mm-hmm. people know that this is not going to be tolerated in a professional setting. So oftentimes it can be done in a more secretive kind of way.
And so when your job's on the line, when your livelihood is at stake, how do you handle it? What do you do about it? I mean, we know what Jonathan Martin did. What does the average person do?
Well, go through a lot of agony is what a lot of people do. They really question, is this really bullying? Did I do something to deserve this? Who am I going to go to, especially if the person who's doing it is in authority over them? And the most likely scenario is that the person eventually leaves.
Kevin Blackiestone, most people, I guess, can go to human resources to report harassment or abuse. Right. I mean, what's the mechanism in the NFL for that?
Well, you can certainly do that. You know, franchises are large corporations. They have people who run human resources departments. And, you know, interestingly enough, just the other week, one of the guests in my class is a friend of mine, Demoris Smith, who's head of the NFL Players Association. And one of the things that he is greatly concerned about in the NFL is workplace issues, as he puts them, workplace. He doesn't talk about team. He doesn't talk about playing the game. He talks about workplace. And he's very concerned that that players are not given a fair shake everywhere they may ply their trade in the NFL. He's very concerned that that players get the same sort of treatment, have the same sort of workplace environment in Washington as they would have in Dallas, as they would have in New York, as they have in San Diego, as they would have in Miami. And that's, I know that that was going to be, before this incident, one of his big points of contention come this offseason, because he's very troubled by the fact that so many different franchises treat their players differently.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. Miami Dolphins offensive lineman Jonathan Martin resigned from his team last week after allegations of violent racist threats from his teammates. As the team deals with the public outcry, we look today at the role of football culture and other workplace bullying. I'm joined this hour by Kevin Blackiestone, sports journalist, ESPN panelist, and professor of sports journalism at the University of Maryland, and also by Amanda Nickerson, psychologist, bullying expert, and director of the Alberti Center for Bullying Abuse Prevention at the University of Buffalo. Here's some sound in an interview this week. Miami Dolphins quarterback Ryan Tannehill said that Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin were like brothers and were seen as especially close among the Dolphin team.
You know, I think if you would ask John Martin a week before, you know, who his best friend on the team was, he would have said Richie Incognito. The first guy to stand up for Jonathan when anything went down on the field, any kind of tussle, Richie was the first guy there. You know, when they wanted to hang out outside of football, who was together? Richie and Jonathan.
Amanda Nickerson is a psychologist. What do you make of that?
Well, that sounds very similar to what we hear in domestic violence cases, actually, that in some ways you can be in a very close relationship, and that relationship can also be very violent or abusive as well, and it's not always what you see is what you get. The other thing that in bullying and workplace bullying is that anxiety of not knowing when it's going to happen. I don't know for certain in this case if they really were buddies or if we asked if we would get that same perspective from the people involved, but that phenomenon is certainly not totally alien in the bullying world.
Kevin Blackiestone, what do you make of that from the QB?
Well, it's once again, I'm not surprised, and that's his viewpoint. I would like to hear from Jonathan Martin. He also said something else, comparing his treatment to that of Jonathan Martin, and said that they went through the same thing, which is impossible because Ryan Tannehill couldn't have gone through the racial taunting that Jonathan Martin mm-hmm. had to endure.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. Spartanburg, South Carolina. Thomas is on the line. Hi, Thomas. Welcome to the program. You're on.
Hi, Jane. Hi, KB. I just wanted to say that this seems like a clear case of victim blaming to me. I can't believe that the Miami Dolphins, Jonathan Martin's teammates, are supporting Richie Incognito, and it seems like they are blaming the victim, and I just want to hear what you guys think about that.
Thomas, thank you. Amanda Nickerson, there's a lot we don't know in this case, certainly a lot you don't know, but victim blaming, does that sound like something that could be possible?
Absolutely. I think when people hear about these types of situations, they automatically think, you know, we live in a just world. What happens makes sense. So that if someone is tolerating this, then they must be in some way to blame. You know, you hear a lot, they should just stand up or they should just ignore it. Well, we don't know what's been tried. We don't know what the result would be. We see what the result is that this is made public, and can't imagine that there wouldn't be some sort of fear for retaliation and that this would just happen and more people would be involved. That's a really likely scenario, unfortunately.
Here's Jerry in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hi, Jerry. Welcome.
Thank you. It seems to me that adult bullying is kind of anathema. These people may be adult chronologically, but they're really not if they're doing these kinds of things. These aren't formative years of children. These people need to grow up, be adults, act like adults, deal with their situations head on, and move on.
Jerry, thank you. Here's Debbie in Kittery Point, Maine. Hi, Debbie. Welcome.
Thank you. I think it's a matter of boundaries and limits. There's good-natured joking around. There's fraternal pranks, et cetera, getting up and leaving the table and then laughing about it and saying, no, you know, we're just kidding you, and you are our favorite person. There's a way to reinforce the positive here. And I think that Martin did man up. I think he voted with his feet, which is what we teach our children to do. Instead of punch him in the face, as was recommended to him, he voted with his feet, and I think his parents probably raised him to make those very wise choices, not weak choices, when he's faced with something like this. As an adult, I had an experience where I went white river rafting with a bunch of friends, as all adults, and I got separated in the water from my boat mates and got picked up by another boat filled with strangers. When my boat approached my existing my original boat to reconcile me to my water mates there, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. they played a prank on me by scurrying away and paddling faster so that I couldn't get rejoined with my boat. The first time, it was good-natured fun. When it continued for the next 8 hours, it really hurt. and we were all adults and we could live through it and get past it. But I must say, there was a little bit of shock to my system that my friends were paddling away from me after the first original, ha ha ha, isn't that funny?
Debbie,
and I think it comes down to leadership.
Ah, leadership. Interesting, Debbie. That's a great point. Let me pick that up with Kevin Blackiestone. Talk about the leadership of this Miami Dolphins coaching staff. This is a young coaching staff. What does it say about its management, about how they've handled this?
So they've handled it horribly. I expect someone to take the fall for it. Every coaching staff knows what is going on with his players, particularly in the locker room. They either supported this tacitly or they were complicit in it. And they were also, I think they were also in a tenuous position. Philbin's a first-time coach, and he's trying to establish himself in this league and with this team. There are coaches in this league who do not tolerate any sort of hazing whatsoever with their team. There are others who just look the other way, and there are others who will actively encourage it. I'm not sure where the Dolphins coaching staff will wind up falling, but clearly they did not do enough to stamp this out before it became a personal attack. Oddly enough, when one of their highly valued players, who had started every game for them since he had been in Miami for a year and a half.
Amanda Nickerson, as a psychologist, what would you say about how leaders, to Amanda's point, how leaders set the tone, a tone that may allow bullying to occur? They certainly do. I mean, we have our formal policies and laws that we can look to for bullying, at least in schools. Now, this is a big issue in workplace bullying that we don't have those unless they cover harassment. But the tone that's set by the leader makes a big difference. Again, as Kevin mentioned, either explicitly or more implicitly reinforcing or setting the tone for what's happening, people are going to take their lead from the person in charge. And so that is just a really critical role for what kind of tone is being set. I also like that Kevin pointed out that we can't generalize this to all of the NFL, or, you know, this sometimes happens that we just say, well, it must be all football players. There are great examples of coaches and athletes that have really taken a stand about this issue and have worked with youth in a really proactive way to send a good message. So I hope we can take this opportunity to do more of that as well.
Here's Ira in Montpelier, Vermont. Hi, Ira. Thanks for waiting. You're on.
Hi, Jane. Thanks. I just wanted to stand by Mr. Martin. I experienced bullying and oppression in high school and high school sports and high school locker rooms, and I think that's sort of a starting place. And because there's so much oppression in society, especially around race, class, and gender issues, I experienced oppression around gender and issues of sexuality, especially in locker rooms. So when I hear about it happening in the NFL, I just think it's more of this sort of normalized violence that we experience all the way from schools, from elementary schools through high school into major league sports. And I also wanted to say that what's normal, what's considered normal in terms of this like horsing around or joking around between players and athletes. And I just wanted to say that I would question about what's really normal, because to me it sounds like it's actually not. If we have this alpha male culture that's like really like oppressive to people, even though they might not stick up for themselves and say anything, I don't think that's normal. And the alpha males that I know that are truly alpha males are like gentle, strong people, and they would never hurt anybody.
Ira, thank you. Kevin Blackiestone, would you respond?
Well, I guess maybe I'm thinking of the alpha male in the terms of the NFL as being very stereotypical males in an athletic setting. And there are a lot of them like that in the NFL. Let me say this about Jonathan Martin, though, in the context of a couple of things we've talked about. You know, I think the NFL should really, really embrace Jonathan Martin and really, really distance itself from Richie Incognito. because all the discussion in the NFL coming up to this point, this particular story, which has transcended the sports pages, has been about injuries in the NFL, concussions, and its gratuitous violence. And the interesting thing to me about Jonathan Martin is he is clearly one of these athletes, a new age NFL player, who is able to compartmentalize his violence on the field and not take it with him off the field. Whereas Richie Incognito is the exact opposite. Mm. He is the exact kind of player that gives the NFL a bad name.
So why wouldn't the NFL embrace him? And what would be the fear of doing that?
You know, I'm not so certain that they won't at this point. It's going to be interesting. You know, just the other day they announced that they were hiring a lawyer to do an independent investigation of this that's going to be delivered to the commissioner. That's a little bit troubling, and then released to the public after he sees it. I wish it was done the other way around. I would not be surprised, and I would think, that the NFLPA would also do the same sort of thing. So it's going to be interesting in the next few months to see how this all fleshes itself out.
Let's get Mike in here from Rochester, New York. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Having served in the military and having grown up with brothers and pledged to fraternity, a lot of this, we're overblowing this a little bit. I think when you get a group together of males, and you're trying to make them work as a unit, there's a whole lot of different personalities and disciplines. But what happens, what emerges is there's leaders that you just think you can sort of have a glow around them, and people want to be like them. And there's also a group in that platoon or that group that you don't want to be like. So they're both leaders, but one's in a negative way. And I would just comment that Richie Indelicato, would have taken any hit, any beating, anything he could for his teammate. And he never did violence against his teammate. Yeah, a lot of ugly words and all that, but I think we're overblowing it.
Kevin Blackiestone?
Yeah, with all due respect, that's incorrect. Richie Incognito was kicked off the Rams team for attacking his own players and for going after coaches. He's been twice kicked off the Nebraska team by two different coaches for his behavior on the field and in practices. He has been a menace not only to his opponents, but to his coaching staff and his teammates.
Mike, thanks for the call. Renee, you're on from Hampton, Virginia. Welcome.
In 1960s Virginia, Ettrick, Virginia, to be specific, I was one of several individuals who integrated a school. And every day I was chased home by a boy and his bulldog amid racial slurs and everything. And it seemed as if the teacher was even in cahoots a little bit with this kind of abuse, because she would keep me after school every day waiting until that young man could come back with his dog. This led for me to my being very interested in bullying and trying to find out what happened, to the point that I even devised some training sessions while working for the federal government.
So, Renee, with that as your history, and I'm getting close to the clock here to get out of time, but what do you make of this story in the NFL?
I'm very proud of this young man, that he was brave enough and of a certain amount of conviction to man up and walk away. Unfortunately, a lot of individuals might not have that same opportunity, especially individuals who would need to continue to work. In the workplace, that's a lot of the problem. We still need to continue to work, and so consequently, we do not do what is necessary for ourselves and for our own self-esteem to stand up for ourselves.
To stand up and walk away. Renee, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. Kevin Blackiestone, what's the future of each of these players, Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin? Will they play again in the league?
I think they'll both play again in the league.
You do?
I do. I think, Richie Incognito, the reason he was able to be in the league despite all of his issues is because he's a very good player. He was a Pro Bowl player. The reason Jonathan Martin is playing in this league and started every game since he's been in it is because he's that talented of a player. and offensive linemen are always in great need in the NFL.
And yet, what changes will we see in the NFL because of this, Casey, if anything?
Well, I'm going to bet that they're going to come out with some sort of statement about hazing and how it could lead to bullying, and how they may come up with some policy about what players and teams in the league can and cannot do in terms of hazing. You know, oddly enough, you know, hazing is actually illegal in a lot of states that teams play in. But I'm sure they'll come out with some sort of statement like that. But I fully expect both these players to be back in the NFL. There's always some coach out there who thinks that he can fix a broken player.
Mm. Amanda Nickerson, you get the last word here. As a psychologist, what's the message that you want us to take away this hour?
Well, I think this, like a lot of the other high-profile incidents, it can be a time that good can happen out of this as well. Hopefully there will be some changes in policy that's more than just talking that doesn't mean anything. And hopefully people pay attention to this and say, how can we work for more civil environments for our kids and also for our adults?
Amanda Nickerson, director of the Alberti Center for Bullying Abuse Prevention at the University of Buffalo. Really appreciate your comments and appreciate your time today. Thank you, Amanda.
Thanks so much for having me.
Kevin Blackiestone, sports writer and college professor. He teaches sports journalism at the University of Maryland. Kevin, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks again, Jane.
You can continue the conversation, listeners, and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.